Today, I have the pleasure of introducing a CEO who's been in the data-driven and performance space for 15 years and is an expert in inspiring women leaders. So I'm excited to hear her insights on diversity, not just in AI, but also in sales and innovation. But before we get into the podcast, let me tell you a little bit about her. Susanna Chaplin has founded two businesses, ESB Connect and Data Labs Group, and she has been fortunate enough to work with numerous household brands from Aston Martin to Yo Valley Organic. Suze is passionate about leveraging data and technology to create meaningful customer experiences, and she wholeheartedly believes in the power of email as a communication channel and an ID to make acquisitions personal as retention across all the channels. As the CEO and driving force behind ESB Connect, she has spearheaded numerous brand acquisition campaigns and believes in using data-driven insights to improve the results delivered for a brand. Beyond her two businesses, Suze is a self-proclaimed GDPR and data geek and is dedicated to making data accessible to all. And as part of this, she supports women in pursuing entrepreneurship and leadership roles. So Susanna Chaplin, welcome to Women with AI.
Hi, welcome. Lovely to join you.
Oh, it's great to have you here. So we'll just jump in. Well, if people don't know sort of who you are and what you do, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you do, because I think you set up ESB Connect 10 years ago. So if you could talk us through that, because then you then set up the Data Labs Group 3 years ago. So what happened? Tell us.
So ESB, yeah, nearly been running for a decade now, and that's suddenly when you feel like old. I was saying to someone yesterday, I keep being like, yeah, I went to uni last year, and realise that was totally a lie. It's been many years ago now. But yeah, ESB was kind of founded around the whole idea of programmatic email. And so a lot of people used email as a retention channel, and email as an acquisition channel was used, but it kind of lacked any transparency in the ease to buy at scale. So ESB was basically founded out of that need. So we have a large consumer base, which a brand would then come to us, would create audiences on that consumer base, send the campaign for them and drive them results. Very much an acquisition. I guess Data Labs kind of came down the line as we realized the sophistication in understanding the data. So the ability to kind of look at all the relationships that you can build in a data set at scale and essentially provide brands with insights on their database using underlying data sets like ESB as the foundation for it.
Cool. Okay. And how I guess over the last 10 years, you probably weren't using AI at the beginning, or were you, like, sort of machine learning? How's it changed what you've done?
Oh, hugely. So I think even if I look 3 years ago when we started using, we started Data Labs and just building out basic data models where we would train them using machine learning, etc. A model would take, you know, 6 to 12 weeks to build and test. And now the speed at which we can build models is so much quicker. Just being able to scale that data and a lot more efficient ways. I think for us in email, and I always say this, like, AI is actually really additive to it, because there's so many reasons why an email might not click beyond just the look of the creative. And it goes back to when you send it, whether your relationship with that inbox provider like Hotmail, Gmail, etc., whether they are receiving a lot of mail into that inbox at any moment in time, so they may delay your delivery, your sender's reputation, the data quality, the subject line, the time of day, what other emails are in their inbox at that moment. And all of these things are impossible for a human brain to like understand. And so you're always trying to previously make judgments of being like, what's the best thing we can look at, and then see if we tweak this, does it make a change? Whereas now you can look at lots of things in one go and find out underlying patterns and remove like any biases that you may have of being like, oh, it's definitely send time which has the biggest impact, or it's definitely the creative, etc. So that's where like we have found that has added a lot of value and sped things up over the last few years.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing, because you're right, I guess at the beginning you would have been just using guesswork.
You basically are. You're looking for the best data point to make the best educated guess, and then you're doing a test. And even when you try and make your tests like so controlled, they're never perfect tests. So your data is never 100% accurate. That sounds weird, because what I mean by that is, even if you do a test at the same time on the same day, you're always going to use slightly different data sets, because you don't want to send the same email to the same person within the same moment. So there is always something that is different, which like invalidates your results to a certain level. So it's always your best guess. Whereas I definitely think AI allows you to do it at much greater scale across much more data.
Yeah. So I guess it's speeded up the way you work and how you do it. You must have so much data stored.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think that's the biggest challenge in the space we're in. And going back to like so much impacts deliverability around email and then also engagement, is that we track so many different data points, like when was it sent, when was it delivered, what type of inbox were they using, what device were they using, what creative, what subject line, when did they click, when did they open, did they open again, did they click. And you think about, we send about 50 million emails a month, so you kind of equate that out to the scale of data we have, and then you suddenly are like, oh, okay, that's why it's hard for like a human brain to compute that information.
Wow. And was there any, like, I don't know, do you see sort of biases in the data, or do you think you kind of, the human, where you're trying to do it with your human brain, it, you've got kind of probably multiple biases, you're thinking, oh, it's probably this, it's probably that, like, yeah, how do you sort of come across that? Or, you know, do you, yeah, do you see any bias or not? Or how would you know?
Oh, 100%. And I think that's the biggest challenge, one in the marketing space, and also like in our data itself, is because everyone has their own biases. So if we start working with a brand, you often see it through your own lens. It's like, oh, I think this would be the main USP because, you know, that resonates well with me, which might not resonate well with the next person. So you're, by default, when you're setting up some of these tests, you're almost setting them up from a personal perspective and almost causing that bias in the data going forward. I'll give you an example. If like someone's scheduling and they're like, well, I think Monday at 9 o'clock is the best time, and then they consistently always schedule around that because it gives them the best results, is that like a self-fulfilling prophecy? Whereas like, say on AI, you could be like, split test across all the day of the week and make sure we send like every half an hour across those days, run it for 4 weeks and then give me the result, rather than starting from a personal perspective. And I think the reason why most people start from a personal perspective or some kind of foundation is just because we can't do as many tests from a human that you can do from a computing point, that you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah, because we were talking at work about what's the best time to send a tweet out or a social media post, you know, and someone was sort of going through it manually going, well, I always send it then and that's when. And I was totally thinking that. It's like, yeah, but that's because you're sending it then. So they're probably looking at it then. Why don't you test some other times? And like, does everyone use it? Like, is everyone, were you sort of quick to start using AI, or was there any sort of like hesitation?
Oh, I feel we were quite quick to start using it, and then there was a hesitation. I feel that was similar for a lot of people, where everyone jumped into it. I was like, this is really amazing. And then there was like, we discussed this on reading like that Mo Gault's Scary Smart.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was a lot in the press as well that came out, like, you know, AI is going to take over the world. And so I think everyone suddenly pulled back, and a lot of the big companies were also like, oh, we have to be careful of using AI, etc., because we don't know how it's going to be used. So it was almost like, I feel like we did a big jump into it and then slowed it back down, and now are getting back into it and seeing where we can use it in the business, which is additive.
Because I heard you speak on the Digital Voice about that, and I was like, yes, I've read that book, because I was going around to everyone going, have you read this? Have you read My God at Scary Smart? And when I started doing this podcast as well, I was like, has no one else read this? This is just really scary. And then obviously the more that I'm learning about AI and everything, you're kind of realizing that it is everywhere and everyone's using it, and it doesn't have to be scary. But the thing that I keep reading, so I'm currently reading Invisible Women by Caroline Criado Perez, and that is freaking me out. I'm reading it and it's just making me so angry, because it's just talking about all the invisible kind of bias or the stuff that we all just accept, you know, that everything is the man is the kind of the normal and the woman is the other. And that's the bit I just sort of, I want to make sure that everyone that's using, you know, collecting data, that it is kind of, it's new data, do you know what I mean? Rather than it sort of learning from what's happened before and all the sort of existing stuff that's out there and how biased that can be. So do you worry about that at all in sort of what you're collecting?
Oh, yes. I think like, and that's what I mean from like the individual perspective, because we are essentially training it. And we've seen some of the like AI images, you know, I can't remember who did that campaign around Barbie, what Barbie would look like. And it ended up being like completely, like one of them was holding a gun and things. And people are like, you've got to remove this because it's so racist. Mm-hmm. But it's only racist because we're teaching it to be racist. Yeah. And it's learning from past behaviors. And as you're saying there, it is like, will we then, without knowing it, enforce that on it? And that's why almost like AI is great at some level, but we do train it. And I think if you're thinking about building out models, you've got to think about who inputs to those models in the first place. So, and I'm a massive believer like in this, in like, not just like, cultural or like diversity, but having like diversity within your team, like from their like viewpoints and, you know, their backgrounds and all of those things. Who did Black Box? Oh, Michael Saeed did a really good book around this. I can't remember the actual name of the book, but not Michael, sorry, Matthew. But I think that's the same thing when we're training these models. You've got to start thinking about it from like different people's inputs. So you do remove that bias that exists already, because the problem with AI is you're training it on historical data sets and historical views, which will naturally have biases in.
Yeah. Like I haven't read the whole book yet, but I've got to the bit where it's just saying like, even like urban planning is kind of all designed around men and like how they would do a journey, and no one's thinking about, well, actually, you know, it's done by male planners and the man has got in the car and driven to work or driven to the park and ride, got the bus, come back. Whereas a woman is probably like, you know, when they're working, they've probably taken the kids to school and then they've gone to work and then they've come back and then they've gone to the shops and then they've gone to check on an elderly relative and then they've gone somewhere else. And all this kind of stuff, all this planning for like, oh, it's £2 a bus journey or this sort of thing. It's like, well, that's not useful because, you know, the woman, if they're the ones that are providing all that care, has probably done multiple trips in the day. So it doesn't sort of work out. Just, I mean, it's kind of thinking about how you need to think how women travel as well as men travel. But that's... that's just me, that's the bit I've got to in the book. But
I do think, I always say this, if I say in a hotel room, you can tell when a hotel room is being designed by a male or female half the time, because a female will always have a mirror, like a long mirror in the room, like, yeah, for one, and good lighting around like the dressing table. And then you go into some hotels which have no long mirrors, and then you're trying to do like your makeup and it's, yeah, like there's no light around the mirror, and I'm like, designed by a man.
Yeah, you can tell every time. I had a friend, she was getting married in Cornwall, and she'd got it was supposed to be like, you know, not the bridal suite, but the room before the wedding night, for the wedding day. And but they knew she was getting ready, and they, you know, the hairdresser and everyone was booked, and there was no full-length mirror in there, and we were all like, hello, like, where's the manager, can we speak to him? It was like, do you really think that this is the best room, or, you know, can you get a mirror? And they end up having to like wheel some like freestanding mirror from somewhere else at the hotel. Yeah, just thinking,
definitely
about
the most frustrating,
who's going to be
thing.
Using it. Yeah. No, I mean, this, so yeah, I mean, this is women with AI, so sort of thinking about gender and equality and stuff. And like, do you feel that there are enough, I mean, you said you've got like people in your team, like quite a diverse range, but do you think that kind of women are happy to sort of jump on the AI bandwagon, or do you think we need to encourage more women to be using AI?
I think the main difference I see between the two is women feel like a fraud sometimes using AI, mm-hmm, whereas when I speak to some of the guys in the team, they're just like ashamedly using it for so many different things. Yeah. Whereas I feel like women often feel like, oh, well, then I'm either shortcutting or cheating. I was saying that I muddle my words a lot of the times. Grammarly's come like my best friend. And sometimes my emails can be long-winded. And I'll write a post now and then ask ChatGPT, like, can you either shorten this, make it punchier, or can you just check, like, it makes sense? And but then, what do you call it? I'll then post it. But I would never get it to write the content to begin with. And my brother-in-law was saying to me, but why don't you just ask it to write your content to start with? And I was like, well, but then it's not my voice. He was like, but it would save you loads of time. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, I guess so. But, you know, that would feel really like unauthentic to me. But then I think a lot of the men are like, well, yeah, I mean, this is a time saving. It doesn't matter. It's, there's a purpose it needs to serve, and therefore that's the purpose it's going to serve. So I wonder if there's that slight like apprehension and using it yeah. as opposed to like anything beyond that.
Totally. I see that, yeah, just in the people that I know that use it. And you're right, I was writing something the other day and I was like, oh, shall I just ask it, or shall I try myself, or maybe if I try, and then I get the kind of view that, oh, well, it's only as good as the data we're putting into it. So if I, or the prompts that you give it, so you have to give it a really specific prompt. But I do, so I got out what it had written, and I was like, no, it doesn't sound right, it doesn't sound like me, I'll just do it myself. And then I probably spent twice as long doing it, whereas if I just used whatever it had given me, I would have saved time, and I would have just, you know, it would have been fine. No one would have known. But I know some people think that, yeah, if you're not using it, if you're not cheating, you're not trying hard enough. And maybe that's either not trying hard enough with your prompts, or I don't know, you're not giving yourself enough time. But I think you're right. I think women feel guilty about using it. But I think that's because we're always having to prove ourselves.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny, we're starting to see it in interviews more. So we do, like, in our second interview, there's normally a task, and you can just, we're starting to spot where people have obviously asked ChatGPT or like a similar product to do the task for them, because you're like, the level of detail in this is just like, one, you just wouldn't have put that level of detail, but it does. More often it's the male who's done it. And like, some are great because they read through it, they understand it, and then other people you're like, you have no clue what's in this presentation. You've literally asked them, they pulled it together, and they're just reeling off like the script.
It's good. That's the scary bit, I think. I mean, yeah, I mean, what excites you about AI? I mean, how do you see it, like, for your business, for what you're doing?
Oh, for our business, it's just the ability to find trends. And like, for me, it's always been so frustrating in the email side to pinpoint really like what causes an like deliverability issue, or what causes a better engagement with an email. And you can always make these like guesses, but you're like, oh, it could be this, it could be that. And so you're always like just almost scratching the surface. And it's just because there's just so much data that feeds into every single send. It's like there's so many different variables. And so for me, it's like, okay, we can finally get into the depths of that and start building up good like patterns and trends that we see that we would never be able to compute ourselves. And also in finding the right audiences for brands. And we've seen this quite a few times where a brand will have a view on who their customer is. Like, we had one FMCG brand that were very much like, our customer is the rural 60 plus farmer who likes to buy local. And then basically we looked in the data, completely disproved it. It was urbanites, double income, no kids yet, who were like, I like to appear I buy local, but actually I just go to Waitrose or Whole Foods and buy like a major brand. And so it's things like that when like we're working with a brand and we're like, this might be who you think your audience is, but let's just like have like a randomized audience basically and see what works best, and then find those interesting like patterns that you're like, oh, did you ever know that you have a massive engager set? Because the problem is like audience come self-serving, like a brand thinks their audience is someone, so they always send to those, and then when they're trying to expand their market, they have narrowed it so much, so they're like, build a lookalike audience of this, whereas now you can almost be like, build me a random audience and find me like people that you think might be relevant, and then, you know, test them out. And that's what like excites me. It's just kind of the ability to expand and find new trends and patterns.
Yeah. And I guess you're, well, are you quite transparent with that? Because I guess that's what people want. They want to know that you've got the tools and that you're using AI and machine learning and you're, you know, everything at your fingertips, because that's ultimately what's going to help them target the right people.
Yeah, so we often like will say to brands, like, we use your primary audience, like, so this is kind of like the audience you think you want to target, but let us also create like a secondary kind of more tester audience, and then let's see how they work. And then we also offer like different lookalike models as well, so it's like, let's test different lookalike models based on like one being like around purchase intent rather than like demographics, and one more around like demographics. So again, you're just getting like a little bit diversity in order to kind of bring in those different audiences.
Oh, do you think it will replace like the number of staff that you need, or see like the human element? Because you, I don't know, I want to believe that it's, you know, it's the good version. It's not the sort of, you know, when Mo's telling you like what it's going to be like, and we're all just going to be at the mercy of the AI and it's going to take over the world, that we've got to somehow retain that kind of, you know, our humanness and like checking it and kind of just using it as a tool. So it's not, I don't know, yeah, unless it's freeing up our time to do something else.
But this is the thing. One, I mean, it's not necessarily the most emotionally intelligent thing. So I always feel like you'll need someone to help humanize the output. So, but I do definitely think there's going to be this two tier of like, say in copywriting, like back if you asked me like 8 years ago, I'd be like, I don't really see the value in a copywriter, you know. And now I'm like, God, copywriting is such an art. When it's done well, it's amazing. But then you think ChatGPT can output copy quite well. But I think there would be a level where you're like, well, that's obvious, it's kind of generated. And then this is like the more premium version. Yeah. And so I do think it will replace some. Not, it won't replace, like, you could, like, people said, like, it make a massive impact on, like, the legal industry, because you could just get contracts written via it. And so I think there would be a certain amount of work that disappears and will be replaced by AI. But then it will encourage us to be better at a much, like, a more strategic, higher level, if that makes sense. Yeah. And then I do always think you'll need people to help train it. So maybe it will replace a midsection of, like, current work, and but then does it give you more time to dedicate on other things?
Yeah, definitely. I did see something the other day, and it was, someone shared it on LinkedIn again recently, and it was like, I don't want AI to like be writing up my press releases and my tweets, and, you know, or you know, so I've got more time to do the laundry. It's like, I need someone to invent the AI that's going to be doing the laundry or the like the dishes, and then I've got time to be creative and paint a picture. Or, you know, write my novel. And that's what my worry is, well, you know, is that, yeah, it's going to stop us being creative, but hopefully it will allow us to be more creative, because you're right, we get the nuances. It's not, you know, AI at the moment isn't, you know, sentient. It's not actually thinking this, that. It's just giving you the facts, isn't it? It's just spewing out data and hoping, yeah, it's correct.
And also, like I've said this a couple of times, it does lie in things at the moment. So like, you have to really, like, as much as you could trust it to a certain level, I still think there's an element of like, I personally wouldn't feel comfortable of just being like, oh yeah, I've done it on like ChatGPT and not going to do like any checks of it, mm-hmm, and put it out there, like just automate that whole process. I still would want to go through and be like, okay, that makes sense. Oh no, don't like that, change that out.
Yeah, no, 100% agree with that. They're kind of like, it's kind of like the benefits, but the scary bits. I don't know, is there anything that scares you about AI? Like, please don't let that happen.
Oh, I think it's like, will they replace us? And, you know, everyone's like, it will. And this is the next phase of evolution. And I was saying, like, when I read that Mo Gault book, I had just had like a baby, and I was like, what, like, I've born this baby into this world, and in like 10 years time we're not going to be required, and why would they ever choose to implant in a human brain, we're like the weakest species, like they're going to put us in a gorilla who's stronger, like all of these things. And that massively did scare me, but then now I'm like, hopefully, I think the problem is how, like, humans have to police ourselves because inevitably we are lazy at one level, so it is easier to shortcut everything and it's our choice to use it for good or bad. But I think that's more the scary part. It's not AI itself, it's like how people choose to use AI, which is more the scarier thing. Like, is it going to be used to grow wealth, greed, power? I watched this like documentary on BBC that was it was all around whether we should allow our Wi-Fi infrastructure to be run by foreign companies. And they were showing, like, in the future, a war could be fought just using kind of like controlling our Wi-Fi, internet, AI and things. So they were like saying, like, for example, someone could turn all the traffic lights in the country to green at the same time and like everyone would be crashing. Or if you had like a smart cooker, they would turn the gas on in your apartment so you didn't realize. And all of these things where you're like, well, that's not the fault of the technology, it's how humans are choosing to use that for power. So I guess that's more the scary part of it, is like how we choose to use it.
I totally get that. I agree completely. You're right, it's the humans that we need to be scared, because you're right, it's how we're using it. Because I'm sure AI wouldn't have come up with that idea that, oh, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to do this, unless you gave it a very specific prompt. How are you going to bring, you know, the entire city, UK, whatever, to a standstill? Yeah, that is terrifying. I feel like we need to, there's got to be, there's lots of positives. Although I was seeing, they've said this week that Apple are going to be putting ChatGPT into the latest phone or the next phone. And I was reading it, thinking, oh, is this going to happen to everyone? Like, how are my mum and dad going to use this? Or how? And then it said, oh, no, it's only in like the iPhone 15 or what have you. And I was like, but is it just going to make us less creative? But then I think it is that mix. You know, people were afraid of the typewriter when it first came out and were worried that it would stop people being so creative, like handwriting their novels. And it, you know, it didn't. It changed from that into, you know, the computer. So, yeah.
I'll tell you what, I could see the value there. And I didn't necessarily get this when our developer showed me the first time. But from a front end perspective on technology, AI is like super useful because where like the average user like us won't think how to speak in a technical sense. So, you know, if we're asking like, oh, can you find me the weather in London? Like, everything's coded in binary yes, no and things, but that's not how an average Joe would ask a question. Mm-hmm. So bringing AI into like interfaces allows like an average Joe to ask a normal question, and then the queries happen in the background, which can still be binary, but it means that they don't constantly have to change the front end interface to allow for like additional data points to be put in. I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but say in like a traditional, like if you were searching for something and you'll be like, I want this filter, so I want size 8 tops and in pink color, like that's all hard coded in. But say suddenly you multicolored becomes really popular, they would have to recode the interface in order to add multicolor, whereas having like AI sitting over the top means that they can make those changes in the back end without having to change the front end, and understanding and it will understand how those are built up over time. Like, oh, someone asking, like, it doesn't have to be I want size 8 tops in multicolor, it might be like, show me all multicolored tops in small, which could also be size 8 kind of thing. I don't know if that's making sense, but I was like, that's actually really interesting because I think it will transform and actually make the internet more accessible to people.
Yeah, definitely. It's making it easier, isn't it? Because you're right. The more people use it and the more we interact with it and the more people of all generations and all sexes, all ethnicities, everything use it, then it is just going to get better and better. And hopefully we can, someone's regulating it somewhere to control it. I've really enjoyed speaking to you, Stacey. Where do you find all your information? Like, if you're going to direct anyone, if they wanted to learn more about AI or more about what you do and email marketing, that kind of thing, where do you recommend they start?
Oh, so that's a good question. So where did I learn more about like AI. I think one, just speaking to people who are using it more. And then weirdly, actually, I found Instagram really useful, like following people who like showed how you do different prompts, and also new tools that are coming out. So they're like, these are like the top 10 tools. So if you're looking for something in Excel, like these would be our recommendations, or like images. And so weirdly, I found that really useful. And then the more I learned about like prompting, like I started to Google search more, like, can you give me, like, if you wanted to prompt it for something like this, can you give me good prompt questions? And looking at like how other people had gone through scripts, and that really trained me up on that side, because I think at first I thought it wasn't very useful, and then like was suddenly like, oh, actually it's all about how you prompt it. So yeah, that on that side, I would definitely say like weirdly Instagram is a very good point for that. On our one, I mean, I know he's available for a chat, or reach out to one of our teams, like more than happy to chat through on anything from like customer acquisition to also getting like the best out of your email data.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. And where can people find you? I guess LinkedIn?
LinkedIn, through email. Yeah, basically, yeah. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. I know he's there.
We'll put all their links on there. But final question, is there anyone that you would like to hear on the podcast, or anyone that you'd like to learn from?
Oh, that is a good question. I think it'd be really interesting to see from like a brand perspective on how, so, and a different types of brands. So anyone at like some of the finance brands, because I think AI is like almost, I think it, like, I think clothing, retailers, beauty, I can imagine using it more, whereas some of the like more traditional brands might be more scared of it. And it would be interesting to see the difference in like how like more traditional finance, you know, everything has to go through legal and data compliance is using it, versus like a more, I guess, like agile startup, like Gen Z company is looking at it.
Yeah. Great. Well, I'll see what I can do. Well, shout out to some brands, get them to come on. Susanna Chaplin, thank you so much for coming on Women with AI.
And thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
Cheers, Joe.